This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek
with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time from Fox Sports Carolina, the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, John Forslund is going to join us. The Jets and the Hurricanes tomorrow evening, live from Raleigh, North Carolina, a game you can hear on TSN 1290 and, of course, see on TSN 3 here in Winnipeg. We start, though, the show looking back at last night's Jets-Montreal Canadiens game, a 3-0 loss by the Jets to the Habs in Montreal. And Ezra Ginsberg, I thought, despite the 3-0 score, this was a game that the Jets were in for the majority of the 60 minutes, probably up until the Habs scored their second goal. But I thought that the play was more even than the final score ends up reflecting last night.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And you could probably say that the scoring chances were pretty even in this game. And, you know, the 2-on-0 that Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler had, that if they score on that, that completely changes the outcome of the game, really, if they're able to get on the board first. But no, it was a pretty even game. Carey Price played really well, but let's be honest, guys, the Winnipeg Jets are snake-bitten at this point. How many games in a row now have the Jets scored 2 or 1 goals now, and it's just not going to cut it. Even the way they've been playing defensively, and even the way Andre Pavlik has been playing, but you look at in the third period there, towards the end of the game, Evander Kane shoots the puck over the net. He's alone in front. If he gets that puck up 6 feet, you know, it's an easy goal for him. So it was an even game. I thought they played pretty well. Defensively, not so much. You know, you mentioned the second goal, Drew Alex Galchenyuk's goal. I just didn't think Zach Bogosian really reacted quick enough when the rebound came to Galchenyuk. And, you know, on the first goal, Grant Klitsam made a poor decision, and Yuri Sikhach was able to go around him. So it wasn't their best defensive effort. But as far as, you know, the scoring chances and the pace of the play and all that, it was pretty even. But how many games are you going to win scoring one goal, right? And we've seen this too much. And the Jets have definitely improved defensively. But that game, it was one of those games where you just needed to score one, really, maybe, and you win the game. 2 goals, obviously, the empty netter notwithstanding.
Sure.
But, you know, they just can't seem to get goals.
7 even strength goals in their last 8 games, Richard. At what point in time is it not so simple as saying they've had bad puck luck and more a function of this is just a team that doesn't have a great offense? Somebody, each and every year, has to finish in the bottom 5 in the NHL in goals for. Why isn't it the Winnipeg Jets?
You know, I think, Drew, they have enough talent to be a little bit more effective than that. I mean, they're not top 10 talent. I mean, they don't score goals effortlessly like the Pittsburgh Penguins do or some other teams, but they have enough talent to not be that low in the standings, we think. And so I guess the question is, are they, you know, Paul Maurice said after the game that he didn't think that their defensive play, which has been pretty solid, has contributed to their offensive or the lack of offense. I disagree with that. I think when you're playing a more defensive style and you're staying at home more, you're more likely to have less chances. I think a lot of the Jets' chances you're seeing are coming out of transition off of turnovers from the other team because the Jets are playing back. They're not being as aggressive. And that helps you goal score. That helps you in goal prevention, but doesn't necessarily help you in goal scoring. So I think what you have to look at here is possibly a little bit of a line shuffle. See, it's tough for a coach, right, guys? Because coaches don't like to change a winning formula. So the Jets go through winning all these games or getting points out of all these games, but they don't put goals on the board. And a coach says, well, you know, I don't really want to shuffle the deck if what we're doing works for whatever reason. Very few coaches will change lines when a team's on a winning streak. That being said, I mean, yeah, Coach Maurice has to ask himself, if I shuffle the lines around, will I give anything back defensively? And we don't know the answer to that.
Sure.
If I put Blake Wheeler with Ladd and Little, and I know that's worked before, and I put Frolik with Scheifele and Kane, will that spark the lines? Will that really hurt us defensively? I think that's something they should look at. And I know they're getting chances as well, but sometimes you have to change it up because it gets a little stale. Doesn't mean you don't go back to it eventually. It worked. Some coaches like to change things when they work to know if something else works because they can always go back to what worked. And Scotty Bowman, guys like that. I do see one issue being the Kane and Wheeler combination. I know they had chances, obviously, that 2-on-0 last night and other chances. You mentioned the Kane chance before. Wheeler loves to skate in transition or out of his own zone, break out of their own zone, down the left side. And that's his play, right? Next to curl that corner. The problem is that's where Kane likes to go. And Kane's is a straight-ahead left winger. He goes, you know,
north-south.
The old Gordie Howe, just stay in your wing, and he stays in his lane, which is fine. But him and Wheeler kind of like that same part of the ice, and when Wheeler kind of curls in for the pass sometimes, Kane, where Ladd would have given it to him or the defenseman would have given it to him, that's Kane's puck. Or Kane has the puck and doesn't want to give it up. That's just the way he plays.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder if maybe a Frolik there, well, he can't give up as much speed-wise, just the smarts getting out of the way a bit might help, and getting Wheeler up with Ladd Little, who I know played really well, and obviously there hasn't been a ton of goals lately, maybe that gets Wheeler going a little bit more. Wheeler seems to be overthinking a bit. So do you give anything back defensively there? I don't really think so. I mean, sure, Frolik's going to be a little more aware defensively than Wheeler, say, but Wheeler's going to be more offensively proficient and keep the puck in the offensive zone more. So I think maybe that's one switch I would consider. And I don't think Maurice should stay away from it just because the team's been getting a lot of points, but I can understand why he would.
As I think it was early in the year, or maybe it was even in the off season when people were, you know, doing what they do and they're speculating on line combinations, and somebody mentioned, you know, playing Kane and Wheeler together, as we've seen. And I believe Paul Maurice said at that point in time, there's such a thing as too much speed, that perhaps a line can be too fast. Do you see elements of that when you look at the Kane and Wheeler playing together right now?
I think it's more so that a lot of the player, almost every single player on that line wants to have the puck. Kane doesn't pass. Vander Kane doesn't pass. I'm not the first person to notice
this.
And it's mind-boggling he didn't pass on that 2-0.
I don't think it was there. I want to defend him on that one. Let me interrupt. Given where each of those players were on the ice at that time, I thought it was an awkward pass if a Vander Kane was going to make it to Blake Wheeler.
And my point there would be, I don't mind if he doesn't pass, but at least give the impression of a possible pass. And so if you listen to Carey Price post-game, he said, I gave him blocker and I took it away. Like that's what he said. He said he cheated, gave him blocker, and by the way, Price looked amazing last night. Gave him blocker and he took it away. But my question is, if he thought he might pass, would he have cheated like that? Would he have cheated in that fashion? I don't know. I just think, I don't mind Kane shooting. He's a shooter. He's got a great shot and he's really fast. But why not make it look like you might pass? Give him a seed of doubt that he can move side to side like that.
Well, because Evander Kane's playing into the Canadian scouting report at that time, because the scouting report for every team that plays the Jets is Evander Kane's going to shoot, and he's going to shoot from everywhere. So going back to the original question there, Ezzie, is it time for the Jets to shuffle the lines like Richard's suggesting to generate some offense?
Look, it's 16 games, and Kane and Scheifele have a combined 3 goals.
Kane was, in fairness, he was out of the lineup for a number of games.
That's true, and he's got 1 goal in 8 games. So
sure,
I mean,
yeah.
I think that you look at these lines right now, and I think you're hoping that Paul Maurice is looking at possibly changing the forward lines, possibly dressing someone else, even looking. He hasn't had a call up this year where he's actually used someone from the AHL. So you're talking about Patrice Cormier was brought up as an emergency recall and never actually got into the lineup. But you're looking at a team that's healthy right now.
Oh, yeah.
And we haven't seen any changes in any of the forward lines. And are you going to bring up the top 2 scorers in St. John's or Chase Ballasy and John Albert? Are you going to possibly bring one of them up and hope? Well,
I don't think so. Do you think so? I mean, those guys aren't going to
score.
Are
you not looking at it?
I don't think so. I think you're looking at who you got here. And I mean, I know they're creating some chances. Like, they had some good chances last night. And that's always the sign of they're eventually going to get something here. But you wonder if they have to shuffle the deck just to get that something going.
You've got 0 goals on the fourth line.
Yeah, the fourth line's never going to score.
You've got 0 goals on the fourth line and I believe 1 or 2 on the third line.
Third line's created chances. Fourth line doesn't create any
chances. So you're looking at every line has issues right now. So either you're expecting improvement from within, bringing in Matt Halaschuk. You got to do something here, because even though you've been winning, you're not getting the goals, and how long can you sustain that? I don't think very long.
I think any of the forward options that are currently in the press box, which is Anthony Peluso and Matt Halaschuk, those are just guys that are going to go on to the fourth lines. I don't see taking anybody from the top 3 lines out of the lineup right now. I think that, like Richard's advocating for, more rearranging the deck chairs of the top 3 lines is more likely than somebody from the press box or somebody coming up from the AHL, because I just don't see. I mean, there hasn't been that much. There's not a Tanner Pearson and a Tyler Toffoli banging their head to get into that Jets lineup that's playing in St. John's right now.
I think Jesse made a great point before, and I agree with it. In the line of Kane, Scheifele, and Wheeler all liking the puck on their stick. I think that's a very good observation. I mean, and that's not a negative for those guys. I mean, that's just the way that these guys play, right? And if that's the case, then maybe you need to get guys for, like, Frolik, for example, doesn't need the puck on his stick that much. He can play away from it. You know, he can be that third wheel or whatever it may be. And maybe that's something you need to shuffle. And again, I know there's been some chances here, but I think when you're playing on a team and you're a little snake bitten, a little change doesn't hurt. A loss doesn't hurt either, by the way, to get you going a bit.
You mean they weren't going to win every game for the rest of the year?
Right, but I think a change, and frankly, a change against a team as poor as the Carolina Hurricanes might be just what the doctor ordered.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we break right there? When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and the Hurricanes tomorrow night in Raleigh, North Carolina. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening here on NHL Midweek with Illegal Curve Hockey, and this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, tomorrow evening, the Winnipeg Jets, barring a very unlikely Stanley Cup final, will make their only visit to Raleigh, North Carolina, to play the Carolina Hurricanes. The second time that we have seen the Hurricanes early on in this 2014-15 NHL season, and they are an improved team from when we saw them earlier. When we saw them, they were struggling. They did not have a win yet on the season. But lo and behold, the Carolina Hurricanes are now 5-0-1 so far in the month of November. So much like the Winnipeg Jets, they've been on a hot streak as of late.
You know, Drew, I mean, it's part of that you can't play any worse. Part of that's you're getting your players back.
Right.
Skinner, Eric Staal. You still don't have Jordan Staal, but that's two big players. I mean,
those are their offensive leaders.
You know, for example, if you take Brian Little and Kane out of the lineup in Winnipeg, huge problems. I mean, not to the same extent. The Jets have a better lineup than Carolina, but in an NHL, guys, Kopitar's not playing for LA. Any team. This is a cap era. No teams have great depth anymore. So you can't take the top guys off of a lineup and expect them to really succeed, especially for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, and Richie, the Hurricanes weren't good last year, and the expectations weren't very high, at least I think among us and a lot of prognosticators as far as how they were going to finish. But you talk about their recent winning streak. Unfortunately, it was followed by not winning a single game in October. But why is that? Well, the goaltending's been better. They've beat some pretty mediocre teams as well in there, Columbus twice. They did shut out the LA Kings, so, I mean, you don't want to take anything away from them, but they've absolutely started to play better, and they've saved their season, essentially, Drew. The way they played in October, they were second last, I believe, only to Buffalo after the month of October, so you're talking about being in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes, even though...
That might be where they wanted to be anyways.
Yeah.
But
true.
Yeah. And that could possibly be the case at the end of the year, but yeah, you've started to play better, and I think that starts in goal. You know, at the beginning of the season... And we talked to John Forslund about this at the beginning of the season, actually before the season started, and we're going to have him on at 6:30 tonight. But he was saying Anton Khudobin, Cam Ward, they're competing for the number one goaltender spot. And what you've seen is Cam Ward's got 5 of the last 6 starts. He's got all of the wins in this most recent little run here. Anton Khudobin was kind of splitting early on in the season, but he hasn't played very well. But Cam Ward is starting to look like the Cam Ward of old. Maybe not necessarily the spectacular goalie from 2006 when they won the Cup, but he's starting to reestablish himself. He had just a terrible year last year, but you know, Richie mentioned Eric Staal coming back. Without Eric Staal, without Jordan Staal, I mean, this team is relying on a lot of guys that played for the Charlotte Checkers last year, and they've done a good job. But I mean, you're talking about guys that have very little NHL experience, and to me, especially with the Staal brothers, it's a small team. And for me, the Jets are going to be able to really take advantage of that. And they took advantage of it when the Carolina Hurricanes were in town earlier this season. But this is a team that's really going through their really rebuilding process, Richie. And, you know, the future looks bright here with guys like Elias Lindholm. But it's a team that really lacks top-end offensive talent. They've done a nice job here winning some lower-scoring games. But it's absolutely a game the Jets have to look at as a game they can win. Not going in too cocky, but mm-hmm. it's definitely a team they can beat.
And you look at the goaltending, and you look at, as he mentions, Ward and Khudobin, their numbers aren't great, but this is also a very poor defense and not a great team overall. So part of that, you know, burden goes onto the team for the way that the goaltending numbers have appeared, not appeared, are so far. I think to Ezzy's point, you know, rebuilding squad, a smaller squad too, you know, Stahl certainly helps in terms of getting some size in the lineup, but you look at their back end and there's a lot of holes there, right, guys? I mean, Sakara is an offensive guy, but, you know, how good is he defensively? Justin Falk's a good player. I mean, he'll make mistakes here and there, but he's a good player. He moves the puck real well. Smart player.
10 points on the year so far for Justin Falk.
Well, I mean, he makes a very good breakout pass. He can read the play very well. Ron Hainsey, I mean, Jets fans know what Ron Hainsey is. John Michael Lyles is certainly, you know, a guy who's been AHL, NHL in the past couple of years and really is a 6'7 guy for sure. And then Jay Harrison and Tim Gleason, those are solid, kind of, you know, nothing special about those guys. That defense, if you want to say Falk's a two, you could certainly say he's a two. There's no one there.
Right.
Then you're looking at fours and fives and sixes, really, right? So that's when the Jets, as a team with really nine offensive players, and that top three lines, that kind of Tim Campbell's been speaking about it on the Free Press and on TSN, that's new role depth. Well, you should be able to attack, for example, Hainsey Lyles. I mean, there's even the Falk-Sakara pairing, guys. Sakara, that is an offensive pairing, but on the board, you can really take advantage of those two guys.
It's something the Jets have been pretty good at, especially that third line of the Jets for their forecheck. I mean, look at the size of Dustin Byfuglien and Adam Lowry. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school when I say that those are two big boys and two big boys to get the puck off of. And, you know, a lot of the other guys that the Jets have, of course, are strong on the puck. You look at the forward group for the Hurricanes, and while currently they are being led by Riley Nash, he has 11 points for the Hurricanes. You look and you say, look, the guys who we can't have beat us are Jeff Skinner and Eric Staal. We'll take our chances. If we shut down Skinner and Staal, we'll take our chances that we're going to win that game, given that the Carolina, I mean, the forward lines, there's not a ton of talent there aside from Staal and Skinner.
Well, there's not. You know, you do have some injuries, of course, right? So there's guys who aren't in the lineup who usually are.
Well, I mean, Jordan Staal.
Mm-hmm. Talusti out too, is he not?
I believe Talusti's back. He's playing, I think, right wing there on the third line, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought he was. We'll check into that.
I'll look right now.
But you look at, you mentioned Staal and Skinner. Sure, I mean, those are the most skilled guys on the squad. But you look, Elias Lindholm is a lot better than he was last year.
Talusti played 10 minutes against Carolina. Against Calgary on Monday night.
So you have Talusti. I thought he was in concussion that game. I thought that, if I recall, look into it. Maybe I'm wrong. You look at Lindholm as Salmon. I know Salmon clearly has been a healthy scratch for Coach Bill Peters there. He hasn't been, you know, living up to the expectations of the new contract, which everybody expected him not to live up to, frankly. But Alex Salmon, you leave him open as, and he has, you let him rip his shot. I mean, he could score three goals.
It's so mind-boggling that he hasn't scored yet this year.
Yeah, and he made a nice pass last game to Skinner, cutting into the offensive zone there, a nice little button hook. So their skill after, the problem with this team is that it's just a weird mix. They don't really have that, you know, as you mentioned, kind of a smaller team, so they're not going to kill you on the cycle. They're not really going to get you on the forecheck. They're going to be a speed team that beats, you know, that beats you on rush plays. And that's dangerous if you're playing a style of play the Jets were playing before.
Before being last year.
Yeah, you know, trading chances to, you know, pinching when you're not supposed to, things like that. Now, if the Jets are playing that kind of stay-at-home D, which they are now, very much a defense-first mentality, Carolina is a team that if you are disciplined, you can get chances against them the other way, and you can work on their defense, which isn't great. So it's certainly a very winnable game against one of the worst rosters in the league.
About Yuri Talusti, he was hit in the head by Jack Johnson of the Columbus Blue Jackets last week. Okay. Johnson got suspended for three games as a result. Talusti left the game, did not return to the game, but apparently was fine afterwards, so did not have... they thought it might be a concussion, but apparently he did not end up having
one. My
bad
on that.
Well, if you remember, originally Carolina drafted Jack Johnson, if you remember that correctly. Mm-hmm. Then he went to L.A., he went to Columbus, so... it's interesting to know that Eric Staal is actually playing the wing. You're always used to Eric Staal playing center. He's actually playing right wing on that top line. We'll ask John Forslund about that. To me, he's just as dangerous. And if you remember, in the 2010 Olympics, Eric Staal played wing, and he can play both positions, really. But, you know, I think you nailed it, Richie. If I had to sum up the Carolina Hurricanes, especially the forwards, because I think their D kind of lacks a stay-at-home physical defenseman. I think you're talking more offensive guys. That includes Ron Hainsey. Tim Gleason's probably their kind of stay-at-home guy, but he's lost a step.
Yeah, he's not a great skater.
So I think small and speedy, and this team can score goals. And, you think about if Alex Semin was anywhere near where he was, you know, this team might have a fighting chance. But Jeff Skinner, a guy, again, that, you know, you talk to, and we'll talk to John Forslund, but, like, Jeff Skinner scored the 33 goals last year, set his, you know, career mark. This year doesn't look like the same player. Is that because of the concussions?
Yep.
I'd like to ask him about that because, you know, this team will go live and die by the Staal brothers, Jeff Skinner. Those are their top players, and Semin. But Alex Semin, I mean, I can't figure out is Alex Semin, has he mailed it in after 10 games?
I think he probably has mailed it in for the most part. You watch him play, he's not engaged in the play. I've caught Carolina a few times. I didn't see their game against Calgary aside from the highlights, but you watch
like goals, Richie, and he's getting paid $7 million a year.
Him play as he doesn't go any. You don't need to be in the dirty areas. He just has to be engaged in the game, and you watch him floating around. Alex Semin,
give me $7 million a year. I'll score no goals in the NHL.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll do that for $70,000 a year.
But Semin, you guys, you know, he's a shooter. The thing is, Semin's actually very strong. And you watch him play, and the game comes so natural to him. So that's what's so infuriating about him. But also, that's why you sign him to one-year deals, not five-year deals.
Sure. That was an error in judgment by former general manager Jim Rutherford.
And then Bruce Garriott this week in Ottawa Sun speculated, well, maybe the only team that would take him would be Pittsburgh because Rutherford's there. No.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's an untradeable contract.
It's an untradeable contract, and the talk now is, will they buy him out or will he go to the KHL? And if he goes to the KHL, what would happen? Would there be a quote-unquote retirement like
Ilya Kovalchuk?
Yeah. You got something in there, Richie, because if you look at it with the contract and how he's performing, he might be untradeable, but you know, you look at where he's had success, Washington, Pittsburgh, the connection with Malkin, a fellow countryman. Still, I don't know. I think there's probably there's only maybe 3 to 6 teams that really make sense for him, but maybe those 3 or 6 teams don't want him.
Yeah, Ufa, Russia, and Akbar's Kazan.
That's very clever. I'll tell you what, let's go to break. We'll bring on John Forslund from Fox Sports Carolina. He knows this team as well as anybody. We'll talk to him next. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with Illegal Curve Hockey on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show John Forslund, the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina. John, good evening and thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, my pleasure.
John obviously brought you on to talk about the Hurricanes ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Carolina game in Raleigh. Hurricanes 5-0-1 so far this month in November. A function of the team really playing better or just almost not being able to be any worse than they had been in October?
Well, you know, the 0-6-2 was miserable. It was miserable to be around. But I got to say that the coach, Bill Peters, has done a remarkable job, you know, propping him up when he had to, being tough when he needed to be. And the players, for the most part, got through that stretch, kind of adjusted emotionally so that they were equipped whenever it came around that maybe they could grab a hold of it. A few things have fallen into place for the Hurricanes. And number one, the goaltending has been solidified. Cam Ward's, going back a few years, the way he's playing right now, very consistent, giving the team a lot of confidence. They're healthier than they were in October with Jeff Skinner missing the first 4 games of the year with a concussion and then taking a few to get his game back. Eric Staal being injured, not returning until the end of October, leaving the roster the second game of the season. So you're looking at a situation where that came around too. And then, you know, there were some quality wins in this streak, like their win over Los Angeles, but they've also taken advantage of some teams. Like they played Columbus twice, and as you guys know, Columbus is a train wreck right now with injuries. and most importantly to Sergei Bobrovsky, but they have eight regulars out of their lineup, and they played them twice in a week, won both games, beat Arizona, managed to dig out of a terrible start against Washington on Saturday night, outshot 17-3 in the first period. In that game, Anton Khudobin was excellent in goal. They dug out of it. They earned a point with an overtime loss. And then were able to put it together, you know, on Tuesday night, on Monday night, rather, and beat Calgary. So it's kind of the schedule. It's team health. It's an overall energetic level, I think, they have with a new coach. And it came at the right time because now they have dug out of that hole a little bit. But when you go eight games without a win at any point in your schedule in this league, it's hard to recover from that.
John, you mentioned the 4-1 win over the Calgary Flames, and Bill Peters decided to move Eric Staal to left wing. I guess two-part question, why make that move now, and how permanent do you think that move is?
I don't know how permanent it is. It's an excellent question. I know that he practiced that way today, and he'll start the game tomorrow night on the wing with Jiří Tlusti on the other side and Victor Rask, a rookie, at center. That more or less was a byproduct of another poor start. They had absolutely nothing in the first period against Calgary. Calgary was working hard, playing their usual game, playing with a lot of confidence, and then they were able to sneak a goal past Jonas Hiller late in the first period, a bad goal, kind of kicked off the side of his mask. He wasn't holding the short side post, and it went in. Zach Boychuk scored the goal. They tied the game, and they were able to get some life going in the locker room. And when that happened, Bill Peters also adjusted his line combinations, and he put a variety of players in different spots, and it worked. In the second half of the game, they totally dominated the Flames, and Staal didn't look bad on the left side. And I think they had some preseason conversations about Eric Staal playing the wing. It's been done before, and as you know, it was done in the Olympics. You know, he may be now at this stage of his career, maybe that's where he's headed. When his brother comes back to the lineup, maybe it's, you know, Jordan in the middle, Eric on the left side. And I know even Kirk Muller toyed with that last year and played that as a line with Alex Semin on occasion. So it's not outside the box too much, but it is if you're going to ask how long of a situation will this be, you know, with Eric on the left side. I think, again, they start. But the way this is going with the Hurricanes right now, Bill Peters is really laid the law down in terms of what kind of team game he wants. If anybody varies and vacillates from that approach, the ice time gets adjusted. So a lot of these line combinations you see right now for the Hurricanes were just, as I said, a byproduct of a poor start that resulted in a 4-1 win, which sets up the next game against the Jets.
Yeah, John, watching the Hurricanes play last year and then this year, one player really stands out to me as much improved. Is Elias Lindholm. Seems a lot more confident and assertive in his game. Can you talk about his progression?
Well, he had a tough start in his rookie year because of injuries. He was injured in the summer. He was injured in training camp. They force-fed him into the lineup because they needed to. They actually had the team built with him as the third center, and he hadn't even, you know, got his feet wet in the National Hockey League yet, but that's how thin it was. And he wasn't ready for that. Mm-hmm. And it took him a half season to kind of, you know, get acclimated to the league and understand what he was up against. But from a strength standpoint, he was behind the curve. He was never in a position to show his best because I don't think he was 100% healthy, and I don't think he was strong enough. He went to the World Juniors, played well there, played on the line with Philip Forsberg. They were great. And he was outstanding. He came back, and again, it was kind of a mixed bag. They put him in the American Hockey League for just, I think it was a weekend, and it gave him a little bit of an opportunity to play some heavy minutes, be utilized in all situations, came back to this team. And then from, you know, the Olympic break on, he, along with Jeff Skinner and Riley Nash, were Kirk Muller's best line down the stretch. What he did is take that and go to his summer and work on his strengths, and he came back a lot stronger. And that's going to happen too, right, when you go from 18 to 19 and further, as you continue to just mature as a male, that's going to happen anyway. But he worked hard at that, and he got off to a slow start, as did the team. And I think it was one assist through his first nine games. So now what do you do? So Peters brought him in and said, listen, there wasn't pressure. You're a top six forward here. This is the way this team is built. And, you know, we're going to rely on you for production, but we want you to relax a little bit and just understand that we support you. And I think that helped them. And then Nathan Gerby came back into the lineup, and they put Gerby on his line. And what he was able to do is drive the net and be diligent on the boards and create room for Riley Nash, who arguably has been the Hurricanes' best forward through the first portion of this season, and allow Lindholm some room to operate. And if you give him room, he's great with the puck. He can make plays. Mm-hmm. And Cam Ward will tell you he's got the best release on the team. He's got a deceptive wrist shot. It's elite. It's a great shot. And so now he has confidence. And now the pucks are starting to go in, starting to fall for him. Every game he stands out. Every game there's a moment or two where you say, there he is. He's noticeable. There are many games where he never noticed him. So we're talking about a 19-year-old kid here who's still maturing, but looks like he has a bright, very bright future.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Legal Curve Hockey on TSN 1290. Our guest is John Forslund, the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play voice on Fox Sports Carolinas. John, you mentioned him in discussing Elias Lindholm. You mentioned Riley Nash, off to the best start of his career, certainly, with 11 points, 4 goals, 7 assists in the first 14 games for the Hurricanes. You know, what's going so well with Riley Nash? Why is he performing at a level we have not yet seen this far in his NHL career?
Well, here's a player when Jordan Staal goes out in preseason, automatically is asked to bump and elevate his game from being what was targeted as the third center. Now you're going to be maybe the number two center. And I say maybe because, again, here's a player who has just played himself into a role in a full-time job at the National Hockey League level last year as the three center. Now you're asking him to be the two. He, like Lindholm, had a lot of work to do in terms of his strengths. He's an older guy. He's 25, and he did, and he came back stronger. But the thing about Riley Nash and talking with Bill Peters, they somehow have changed how fast he plays the game. He would play it in a sense where you'd see a guy, he'd make plays. The puck would always follow him because he's got a real good IQ level on the ice. He's got great hockey sense, so he knows where to go, and the puck kind of follows him. But he was either looking nonchalant or slow. It's one of the two. And this season, he's playing with a lot of authority, and he's quicker. He's quicker to the scoring zones. He's quicker to battles. He's winning battles. He's been a dominant faceoff guy. He's been setting up plays, making plays. He's been really good on the power play. And so now what has happened is, I think, more confidence, and he continues to develop. And with that confidence, grow as a player. And now you've got a guy who, like I said before, is arguably their best forward. He's been remarkable, and there's been no drop-off. So for a team that has had a big hole with Jordan Staal being out and Eric Staal having a slow start and some injuries and really not being himself, Riley Nash has been able to not only play at the right level but produce points. So he's been a pleasant surprise for the Hurricanes. There's no question about it.
John, I imagine you've heard all the trade rumors swirling around Andre Sekera. I think, you know, Darren Dreger was talking about him in August on Insider Trading. Not so much August, but I think he actually was talking about him in October. But, you know, he's obviously a pending UFA. Do you think there's a chance the Hurricanes will sign him, or what do you think is going to happen here?
Again, it's a great question because here's a player who last season was their most valuable player and this year has played really well again. But Justin Falk recently, his partner, has gone up a notch, mm-hmm. has been dominant as a defenseman. So, you know, Sekera is in that last year. And as a UFA, and Ron Francis last week was asked about this, and he said that he's in the plans and they want to start addressing an extension with him. For me, I just don't know. And again, this is my opinion. I don't know. The Hurricanes are going to have to figure out who they are. Are they this team that's 5-0-1 right now in their last six? Are they the team we saw in October? Are they a team that's going to be flirting with the lower half of the standings, near the bottom of the standings? Is that what it is? Or do you have an opportunity to be a lot better I think right now you can stay close in the National Hockey League no matter who you are because of the point structure and the parity with the league. So, right, history is shown over the years, guys, right, that you can stay in the mix. And sometimes it's real and sometimes it's phony. So the Hurricanes are going to have to look at probably when you get to U.S. Thanksgiving, you get to that 20-game mark, you get into December, they're going to have to address what they are and have internal discussions as to where they're going. Because you have a player, sure, he's been great, but his last two seasons, and we're not even through this year yet, so that's unfair, but his last season was his best. And with Buffalo, it was some good and there was some bad. And there are many nights he could have been a 1-2 guy for them, and some nights he was a 5-6 and sometimes a 7. Sometimes he wasn't in the lineup. So where is this player? He's proven to be world-class. He did a great job in the Olympics last year. But, you know, the Hurricanes are going to owe it to themselves to take a look at that kind of guy, and either you're going to invest or you make a deal that really improves your team. So that's a chip, I think, Ron Francis, although he says he wants to keep him in the fold, I don't know if you're really completely thinking that way, because with the media, he can't be totally honest. But I think you have to look at it realistically and say, where are you? Where is the team and where's the organization? You know, if you get one chance to do it, this might be your opportunity the way this draft is, whether it be a player that can help or another pick or whatever to really improve your team. So we'll see where it goes. Either way, I don't think they lose, because if they do keep him, he's been dynamite for the Hurricanes. There's no doubt about it.
John, final question here. And Alex Semmons, obviously, been in the press quite a bit. He's a healthy scratch for a couple of games by Bill Peters. You look at his stat line, and you know, obviously no goals in 12 games is disconcerting if you're a Canes fan or in management. But the 16 shots, I mean, Alex Semmons arguably is one of the top three or four shots in the National Hockey League. What's been the problem for him, and how does he turn it around? Because his contract is likely untradeable at this point.
Yeah, no, all it is a waiver situation, which no one touches. And then I think the only, if it continues to go south for this player, the only option the team would have, again, in my opinion, would be to waive him and then assign him to the American Hockey League if it gets that desperate. Because no one's taking that contract, and then it's up to the player to either take his money and play there or balk, and then you have a situation where you can have the parting of the ways. I don't know. It hasn't been good. His preseason, his training camp wasn't good. He had off-season wrist surgery. No one with the team or no one around the team has suggested this is an issue. You never hear from the guy. He doesn't do media interviews, so you never know where he stands. So it's hard to gauge, you know, where he's at. But you can look at his play, and you can see that it's well below his level. It's well below what's expected when you're paying a player, you know, $7 million a year to produce. And you're absolutely right. When you are equipped with the talent that Alexander Semin has from a shooting perspective, from a goal-scoring perspective, I mean, that's what you're looking for. And the rest of his game hasn't been up to speed either. There have been moments where he's been undisciplined with some of the penalties he's taken, put his team in a tough spot. That led to the healthy scratch where he missed two games. They were trying to make a comeback in Vancouver on October 28th. He took an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the third period, which derailed everything. He then hence sat out the next two games. Then he was put back in the lineup, and Bill Peters is stood behind him. He's trying to extract it out of him because everyone knows if he can get to a level with this guy, he's a game breaker. Mm-hmm. There aren't many in the league. But, you know, when you need a goal, when you need a snipe, he should be the guy that gets it done. He's been non-effective on the power play. He's just been a guy that has slowed the play down. And they're playing at a high pace right now. Their pace is pretty good. And he is just slow to the scoring zone. He's slow to battles. He's not getting pucks out defensively when he needs to. And these are things that right now are not being tolerated, you know, with this coach. The last game, the second half of the last game, Monday night against Calgary, was pretty good for Alex Semin. It's the first time it looked like, okay, here's a glimmer of hope. And what happened was he was put on a line with Jay McClement and Jeff Skinner. And both of those players, both of those wingers or top six wingers, were put with a grinding defensive center. And they became a great line. And they're going to start the game tomorrow night against the Jets that way. And whether it's trying to just match the intensity of the way McClement plays in the two-way sense, or if they were humiliated by being taken away from Eric Staal or whatever the situation was, it motivated him. It motivated him to be better. See where his game goes tomorrow. I did a game in St. Louis last night for NBC, so I hadn't been around the team that much the last 24 hours. But I understand that, you know, the attitudes were good today. Peters is kind of reinforcing that. I don't see where he's been, you know, in the doghouse totally. Even when he was scratched, it was, we're going to get this guy going. He's just not going to play. And that's kind of the attitude. And he worked hard. He did all the extra skating that the healthy extras do and all of that. So we'll see. And there hasn't, to my knowledge, been like a move from his representation to say that they don't like the way things are situated here. There hasn't been any pushback to the media's knowledge. Maybe, you know, the front office knows about that, but we don't. So that's what it is. He's a player that's going to be asked to just conform to the team game. And if he doesn't, his ice time will be curtailed. And so far, that's been the way the new sheriff has played it out here.
We will find out how it all plays out tomorrow night as the Jets play the Carolina Hurricanes in Raleigh, North Carolina. John Forslund is the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolinas. John, thanks very much for doing this evening.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
Have a good call tomorrow. Thanks very much, John.
Thanks.
Before we go to break, get your dialing fingers ready. Area code 204-780-1290, courtesy of TSN 1290 and the Egan Convention and Visitors Bureau. We want to send you and three friends Sunday to Minneapolis to see the Jets play the Minnesota Wild. We'll throw in accommodation Saturday and Sunday night, as long as much, much more. Qualify now, 204-780-1290. We announce the winner Friday at 3 o'clock. One more time, 204-780-1290. You, three friends, Sunday afternoon, the Jets in the Wild in St. Paul, Minnesota. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and NHL Midweek.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to John Forslund of Fox Sports Carolinas, the play-by-play voice of the Hurricanes, for joining us to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Canes game. You can, of course, hear it live here on TSN 1290 and watch it on TSN 3 as well. In case you missed any of the interview, we'll have it for you available on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and on TSN1290.ca. Also, congratulations goes out to Will Denslow. He has qualified for the trip to St. Paul, Minnesota this weekend to see the Jets visit the Minnesota Wild, courtesy of the Egan Convention and Visitors Bureau. Be sure to stay tuned to the station all day tomorrow and Friday for your further chances to qualify for the contest. Winner announced during the warm-up with Hustler on Friday afternoon. Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to be taking place in Toronto coming up. Bill McCreary, he's getting in there as an official. I mean, it's a great class. You look at this, I mean, it's amazing that these guys haven't already been in the Hall of Fame. It's just a tremendous class. Richie, you want to talk about Bill McCreary in particular?
Yeah, you know, because nobody ever talks about referees, and Bill McCreary was always my favorite referee in the National Hockey League. I thought he called a fair game. He was assertive. You knew what you were getting with him. Not too many calls. And I thought the players, when Bill McCreary was the referee, the players, you know, took notice and they played the game a certain way. And I thought they played the game the right way when he was refereeing. And, you know, for a guy like that to go in, ref so many games and have such respect around the National Hockey League. I know we're going to talk, obviously, everybody knows about Forsberg and Hasek and Modano, Blake. I mean, and Pat Burns, of course, tremendous class. But Bill McCreary, refereeing in one ref era, setting the tone was so important for the style that you saw. And I thought he was great. Even going back to the Olympics that he refereed in the finals, those games were always so well played. He called the right penalties. He didn't get too involved, which I liked. We don't talk about it enough, but I mean, did a great job. And I guess that leads into this week's Saturday Spotlight. We sat down with Carey Fraser.
That's right. Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday. It's going to be, you sat down with Carey Fraser earlier this week. You spent about 40 minutes talking with him. So I'm sure that's just going to be a fantastic listen, going into his career. Because, I mean, you talk, you know, you hear about the career of players and coaches as they work their way through the ranks. You don't often hear about the career of a ref and how they get to be the pinnacle. And Carey Fraser, of course, along with Bill McCreary. Bill McCreary, of course, was very famous for the mustache. Mm-hmm. Carey Fraser had the head of hair that, you know, was going to stay the same in a hurricane. Those are the guys who are noticeable. Nowadays, you don't know who any of the refs are.
We talk about that.
You talk about it in the interview. Yeah. Terrific. So that'll be something to look forward to on Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our Saturday Spotlight segment.
Yeah, Richie mentioned a couple things that I think are really important about Bill McCreary, you know, and of course, you know, you remember him back in even the Winnipeg Arena days, but mm-hmm. he worked primarily in the one referee system and how balanced he was, and I think that's a mark of a great referee. Referees are going to make mistakes, Richie, and he even has admitted in interviews leading up to this Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony that he's made lots of mistakes over his career. But, you know, you look at some of how it's difficult to ref. I never refed hockey. I refed soccer when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But, you know, reffing hockey, even with a second referee that was introduced, 15 years ago now, but he was really well respected. And I agree with you as far as referees, you know, when I was in high school growing up or whatever, you know, you think of Bill McCreary, you think of Carey Fraser, Ron Hogarth, referees like that, right? And then even Matt Van Massenhoven as a linesman. And Koharski. And so, you know, it's great. And I think, you know, it's important for these guys as well, too, because, you know, sometimes we only think of referees as who we're yelling at hockey games and stuff like that. And, you know, it's easy to blame them for missed calls and everything like that. Like even last night in Montreal, Tobias Enstrom's tripping penalty, you had 21,000 people at the Bell Center thinking that wasn't really a penalty on Enstrom, even though I thought it was and I thought it was the right call. But, you know, good for Bill McCreary. He was a ref for, I think it's the 16th ref.
Ref inducted. Here's the numbers. First of all, the fact he was inducted on his first year of eligibility tells you a lot about Bill McCreary. 1,737 regular season games, 297 more in the playoffs, and another record 44 in the Stanley Cup Final and 3 Olympic Games. So a terrific career for referee Bill McCreary. I just tweeted out, courtesy of our friend Stephen Wino, on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. He does a great article about Bill McCreary in case you want to read more about him ahead of the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremonies in Toronto this week.
Just quickly, Drew, I mean, it's going to be an emotional one this year with the late Pat Burns getting in. And I think we've been talking about this for a couple of years at least now, that, you know, it was really well deserved. So, you know, you have some of the greatest players of their era and Forsberg and Hasek, you know, talking about European players, and you've got Mike Modano, one of the greatest American scorers of all time, Rob Blake, tough as nails defenseman known for the hip check, and you know, winning internationally with Canada, you know, and he finally got his cup with Colorado. But I think it's a nice mix, this Hall of Fame class, and you've got Pat Burns going in there, which I think is long overdue, one of the greatest coaches in my opinion, of his era as well. So it's going to be a good Hall of Fame class.
Absolutely. Let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to discuss the Connor McDavid injury and the place of fighting in hockey. You're listening to NHL Midweek, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 7 o'clock Central Time here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On my far left, Richard Pollock. In between us, Ezra Ginsberg. On the other side of the desk, Michael Remus, and I'm your host, Drew Mandel. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Ezzy, you decided that you wanted to stir up a little bit of trouble earlier today on Twitter. I saw it earlier. You're going on about fighting in regards to Connor McDavid, and you thought that you know, you're an advocate of fighting in the game.
Whoa. Let's not say I'm an advocate.
Okay. What would you describe
the
it
word
as?
The word is strong. I mean, and Richie knows how strong words are. I mean,
sticks and stones can break your bones, Ezzy.
I think fighting has a place.
I was going to say,
in hockey.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm an advocate, because if you start saying advocate, that means that, you know, I go around giving, you know, seminars on how to fight in hockey. But I mean, no, I know what you're saying.
Fine. I would definitely sign up for that seminar. Right.
If you want to call me an advocate, did anybody
take the bait? Did anybody engage you?
Well, this is the thing. You know, Connor McDavid gets into a fight, and why should we be surprised that the entire country is up in a tizzy?
Well, I'd hope the entire country would have something better to worry about. But
well, I mean, this is the best prospect arguably to come around since Sidney Crosby, or if you think he's better or just as good as Nathan MacKinnon, he's one of the best prospects to come around at least in the last 5 years, if not since Sidney Crosby, as I mentioned, who was drafted in 05. But every time something happens, it seems to be a referendum on hockey. And, you know, Connor McDavid gets in this fight and he breaks his pinky finger. We're going to play the clip from Sherry Bassin. It turns out that Connor McDavid has gone to see a specialist, and it looks like he'll be out 5 to 6 weeks. I heard Joel Marcoux was talking about it on the updates, and I imagine they were talking about it on H&L towards the end of the show. So it looks like there's still a chance that he'll play in the World Juniors. But, you know, going back to hockey and what I was tweeting about, everybody, you know, starts talking about this is why there shouldn't be fighting and all that. And then I was retweeting, of course, everybody's tweets, like Biz Nasty last night and everything like that. But Connor McDavid chose to fight. And apparently, if you listen to the interview that Sherry Bassin gave on TSN 1050, they didn't want him fighting. And everybody seems to point at it and say, well, this is why fighting shouldn't exist, because a guy will break his hand and all this and all that. It was a decision that he made personally.
Well, let's play Sherry Bassin. This is Erie Otters general manager, Sherry Bassin on Macko and Cause on TSN 1050 from earlier today.
Well, I mean, obviously we don't want superstars like this fighting. I mean, it's easy. I don't want to get into shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, the kid takes a lot of abuse out there from stick work and guys. Everybody's saying hit him because that's the only thing they can think that can stop him. And so he's a human being, and it's, obviously he would prefer to. And it finally just got to him emotionally. He's a young kid, and that, the real issue is that When I played, there was no video, so you guys can't deny how good or bad I was. except that I can publicly admit I wasn't very good. But the point is this, there was just such a sense of respect in sport that you just don't fight those guys. I was listening to a story last night while I was driving in the middle of the night where somebody said a demeaning thing to Yzerman, and his own player said, like, this is Yzerman. Now we're going to have to fight. I don't recommend fighting. I don't recommend any of it. But I do recommend that if we're going to take it out, we got to be a lot stricter in what's going on and very, very less tolerant in what they can do to superstars and what they try to do. The fact that I've had this full experience of having such a superstar play for me.
Richard, your thoughts on Sherry Bassin's comments regarding fighting? This is, you know, it's his star player. This is his, you know, meal ticket right now in terms of the Erie Otters, and he's going to be out of the lineup for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I think he makes a lot of good points. You know, the guys going after McDavid are doing it because they can't stop him. That's what happens to the best players, and there should be a kind of respect to not fight a guy like that, to be honest. I was actually surprised in watching the video that one of his teammates didn't fly in immediately as soon as he dropped the gloves and get in there. Like, I'm surprised that the team wasn't informed. They probably didn't suspect that he would fight. But I expect the third man in. This guy's not fighting no matter what. And if you're going to try and treat him that way, we're going to pummel you. Like, that's what I thought would happen. I'm surprised they let him get in his own fight. Regardless of the third man in and getting tossed out, who cares? You know, McDavid is your guy. He's your franchise.
Sure. If you lose some guy for the rest of the game, it's not the end of the world.
I have no issue with him sticking up for himself. He broke his hand. It's unfortunate. I think everything's got to be a national referendum in this day and age with the media. But, you know, it is what it is, and I don't think everything needs to change because there's one fight. But at the same time, as soon as anything happens, as soon as a puck goes over the glass, they talk about raising the glass 2 inches. I mean, people are crazy. It's got to calm down.
It's worth pointing out, to be fair, the person he fought, the Mississauga Ice Dogs, Bryson Cianfrone.
Mississauga Steelheads.
Oh, they're not the Ice Dogs anymore?
Nope.
Oh, the Steelheads. Okay, didn't know that. Anyways, the Mississauga Steelheads, Bryson Cianfrone. This was his first fight ever in the OHL.
He's not a fighter.
I believe it was also his first penalty minutes this year. This, to me, look, regardless of fighting, and I used to be anti-fighting. Right now, I'm at the point in time where, you know, look, if these guys want to fight, they can make their own decisions. They don't need to look to me to be a guiding light. This was a freak incident where two guys both decided to fight. He happened to break his hand. It could have happened where he doesn't break his hand, right. And we're not talking about it.
And then we're talking about him sticking up for himself and doing what a lot of guys do, and so be it. And it's 5 to 6 weeks. I mean, my God. So be out. Well, I guess it's close to the World Juniors, and it's over that time frame, and so Canada is concerned. But in reality, it's not a big deal here. He didn't have to drop the gloves. As you mentioned, Drew, he wanted to stick up for himself. Maybe his team wasn't giving those guys the gears as much as they should have. I don't follow the Uri Otters exclusively, or at all, frankly, because, you know, we got to, obviously, enough with the NHL and stuff. But everything needs to be a story now. And now this needs to be a story. And I think people need to take a step back and just say, okay, hey, you know, a lot of good players get in fights. Sometimes they break their hand. Didn't Evander Kane break his hand in a fight?
Cut his hand up pretty badly.
Same idea, right? So, what, you know, so look, that happens.
If Wayne Gretzky had to fight in the course of his career, didn't do it a lot, and no one's advocating for Connor McDavid to all of a sudden become an expert in fisticuffs, but if Gretzky felt the need to drop his gloves every now and then, it's okay with me. Everybody knows the risks. Yes, you know that you could potentially punch a helmet and break a hand. Or potentially you could hit the guy's jaw and break your hand. Or you could potentially do whatever, and things are going to happen.
That's right.
The risks are, these aren't new risks, you know. So he chose to fight. All these guys that fight in the NHL, does hockey need it? No. You know, would I be upset if it was gone? No. Can I live with it? Sure. At this point in time, they're all grown adults, and they don't need to take their guiding light from me.
There's a few things here. This is absolutely a huge story, but it's not a huge story because it should make us think about, really, okay, has this gone too far? Should fighting really be removed? It's a big story because Connor McDavid had 49 points in 17 games, and he was on pace for, whatever, 150, 180 points. He was having a dream season. The Erie Otters have lost one game this year. They're the best team in the OHL. They've got Dylan Strome, who's also a top five rated draft pick for the 2015 draft. The story here is that it's going to severely hurt his chances to have a full great season in the OHL. Now, he still has a chance to play in the 2015 World Juniors that'll take place in Montreal and Toronto, but he was in such a good rhythm, playing so well, basically getting 3 points every night. The issue here, I mean, this is not why, even if, and I trust that you're being the voice of reason here, Drew.
It's but rare really, that happens.
But really, I mean, what we want to really get out of hockey is the stage fighting. This isn't a staged fight. Mm-hmm. This is actually a spontaneous fight. Regardless if you think he should have fought, it had any impact on the game, the reality is he was getting fed up and he decided to fight. And that is a more organic way to drop the gloves. Now, I think that...
You know what, Ezzy? Let me just interrupt you there for a second. You know, you talk about staged fighting. At this point in time, you know what? Everybody knows the risks of getting punched in the head.
It's basically out of the game at this point.
It basically is. And if two guys want to stage a fight more or less and do it, go ahead. You're both grown men. You don't need me to wave my finger and wag my finger and say, no, that's a bad thing, you shouldn't do it. If your team didn't want you to do it, they wouldn't have you on the roster. You wouldn't play in the NHL. At this point in time, if they want to stage fights, go ahead. They're grown men. Why should it be up to
me? Somebody's done an about face.
I have done an about face, completely and totally.
Let's play the clip from last year.
I agree. You're right, Richard. I admit that I've completely done an about face. It's because why should it be up to me to make the determination? The NHL...
Who are you to play God, Drew?
Well, the NHL, the NHLPA, the players themselves, everybody's aware of the risks. They know what the story is when they're going into the event. You know, if they're going to stage a fight and they're going to do everything along those lines, so be it. There's two combatants. And they're like, willing to do it. Go ahead. Why does it matter? It'll be out of the game when it's out of the game. It doesn't need me to do anything about it to get it out of the game.
That's for sure. But the thing is also, you know, as you mentioned, the team's production, Erie obviously having a very successful season. He'll be back for the playoffs when it matters most. It's a long playoffs. Another thing is, you have to understand...
Well, he'll be back in late December.
Right, and these teams lose their best players for December, essentially, the whole month, sure, because they're all in the World Juniors anyways. So the regular season results are always tilted a little bit, depending on who, you know, the teams that actually have some of the really good players that don't make the World Juniors are actually in a better position for standings-wise than the teams with really top-heavy, because they lose their guys.
I promise you that if this injury happened in February, in the last quarter of the regular season when Erie was home and free and clearly going to, you know, have a very good seed in the OHL playoffs.
They still will.
And they still will. And McDavid was going to come back well ahead of time and he'd be healthy for the playoffs. We wouldn't be talking about this at all.
It's not going to change his draft stock either.
What's that?
It's not going to change
his draft stock. No, it's not going to change his draft stock. And the only reason we're talking about it is because of the effect it'll have on the World Juniors and the ability for Canadians to wrap themselves in the flag.
No, the only reason we're talking about it is because everybody and their brother wants to talk about every little thing now on every website and every TV show and every radio show. That's why.
And because it's Connor McDavid. And I agree with you, Drew. I don't think maybe it would have had as much of a as much ramification as if it was in February. But I still think because it's Connor McDavid, we'd be talking about it just because this is his year. And I agree. I mean, he's going to go first or second overall.
He's going first overall.
Well, okay. Well, I said first or second. So that's why we're talking about it. It's not a referendum on hockey. He did something that he regrets. It was spur of the moment. Actually, I'm not even going to say that. I'm not saying that he regrets fighting. He didn't want to get injured. So you look at this, and it's only been one day, and it feels like it happened a long time ago. But it's not an indication that fighting should be taken out of hockey. Fighting should be taken out of hockey when really all of the organizations decide that it's time to take it out of hockey. And by the way, I realize that, you know, we're up against the break here, but really there already is penalties for fighting. It just so happens that, you know, it has to be part of the game because it always has been.
Blown call. Do we need coach's challenge? Too much diving. Do we need to get rid of diving? Fighting. Everything has to be suddenly be examined by the Canadian government to see if it's... Hey, people just need to calm down. It's a fight in the course of a game. He's out for a few weeks. He'll be back. What's the big deal?
You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, six things we learned this week.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Six Things We Learned This Week is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. The big weekend is finally upon us. The 30th anniversary weekend at Rumors is this Friday and Saturday. Tickets available for the late shows on Friday and Saturday. Sold out already Friday at 7:15 and Saturday at 7:15. Get your tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. Great article in today's Winnipeg Free Press as well, in case you missed it. Brad Oswald previewing the 30th anniversary taking place at Rumors this weekend.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Ezzy Ginsberg, I'll start with you on six things we learned this week. Los Angeles Kings forward Trevor Lewis is one of the best and least talked about penalty killers in the NHL.
Yeah, I really like Trevor Lewis. He scored a really nice shorthanded goal about a week ago now, maybe a week to 10 days ago. You look at the LA Kings and, you know, they're such a well-balanced team, so good defensively. In fact, we were talking about how they were only going to have five defensemen on Saturday night, and they ended up winning. But Trevor Lewis, to me, is a guy who doesn't get a lot of credit. He's won two Stanley Cups in LA now, but you think of, you know, the defensive side of the game, and Andrei Kopitar, of course, Jarrett Stoll's a good player. Both those guys play on the penalty kill. Trevor Lewis, to me, certain aspects of Trevor Lewis remind me a little bit of like a Jay Pandolfo with the New Jersey Devils. A really aggressive guy, doesn't get a lot of goals. You know, he last couple of years he's got 5 and 6 goals. But to me, a guy that's really aggressive, really smart, creates turnovers. I think you're going to see him, you know, year after year, he'll start to get more shorthanded goals because he does have an offensive side of his game. But you look at the LA Kings, and after the top guys, he's an important part of this team. Daryl Sutter really trusts him, puts him out on the PK a lot, and just a guy that I really like to watch for that kind of defensive forward side of the game.
Five.
Richard Pollock, for all the talk about Boychuk and Letty, Calvin DeHaan will be an important part of the Islanders' blue line moving forward.
He really is, Drew, and you watch the Islanders play, and they're going to play a pretty up-tempo style. They're going to play, you know, kind of a risky style at times, and you think, okay, you know, their defense is much improved with Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, and it is. And the puck-moving ability of Leddy, skating ability, and then Boychuk, really a solid all-around defender. But a guy like Calvin DeHaan, you know, playing 18 and a half minutes a game, right now playing with Hamonic, Travis Hamonic, of course, Manitoba fans know who Travis Hamonic is. The whole league knows who he is. He plays a very steady game, and I think in that style of play, sometimes it's all over the place, as Jets fans would know from that 4-3 victory there a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. A guy who's a steady presence, who makes a smart decision, doesn't get caught out of position too much, nothing crazy in terms of physically imposing by any means, but smart. And a guy like that on a team like that is to me, a perfect fit and doesn't get enough attention.
Four.
Back to you, Ezzy. The Montreal Canadiens are off to a good start to the season, but they are not gaining enough zone possession during games.
Okay, and you watched the game yesterday, and we talked about it during the first segment, and the Montreal Canadiens got the victory 3-0, shutting out the Winnipeg Jets, but this is a team, and I know we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about advanced stats, but if you look at the advanced stats on the Montreal Canadiens, they're not good right now, and they're 1 point out of the Eastern Conference lead here, and they've won three in a row, and they're playing really well, but look at the Montreal Canadiens. The thing that's concerning to me, and you see this, and this hasn't changed Richie at all since last season, and they're still a small team that doesn't get a lot of his own possession, and then so you're talking about, you know, the Corsi and the Fenwick close. The Montreal Canadiens are a very skilled team, and you saw that, you know, Max Pacioretty found Alex Galchenyuk yesterday, even though they don't play on the same line, but Alex Galchenyuk and Gallagher playing on that second line. To me, this team still has to improve in that area of the game, and you talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, Richie, scoring a lot of goals off of the transition, and to me, the Montreal Canadiens are kind of similar to that. They get a lot of goals using their speed, kind of one or two passes, and they'll score goals, but to me, if you look at teams like the LA Kings or the Chicago Blackhawks in the West and the Ducks and other teams. I know Corey Perry's injured right now, but they're able to sustain zone pressure and kind of cycle the puck and all that. You look at even the Vancouver Canucks. That's more of a Western style, but to me, the Montreal Canadiens don't do that a lot. Usually one shot, two shot, the puck's out of the other zone. So that's something to look at with the Montreal Canadiens, is something that I think they have to prove on this year.
Three.
Brad Richards and Christopher Stieg lack the speed to be overly effective in the Blackhawks system.
When you look at the Blackhawks and you watch them play, they play a great puck-moving style and they play a really fast style. Two of these guys were acquired, you know, more recently. Of course, Versteeg was let go or traded to Toronto, went through Florida and then came back to Chicago, and the Blackhawks were able to acquire him with Panthers eating some of that salary. You look at Brad Richards, he's in on a one-year deal, but the overall team is such a fast team from defense to offense all around that these two players, right now I know Quenneville, we had Scott Powers of ESPN on, they shuffle their lines around a ton, but right now Versteeg's playing with Taves and Kane, and anybody can play with those guys and put up points. He's trouble, I know he scored some nice goals, but he has trouble with his foot speed in that offense creating. And Brad Richards, the same thing. When you talk about too much speed earlier in the show, Drew. To an extent, I can understand that because sometimes everybody's going too fast with the puck, as he mentioned. But guys like Versteeg, I think they flourish when they're able to play with a different style. And I know Chicago beforehand, I think Versteeg is a more effective player. Now he's not as effective. But a guy like Brad Richards, it's tough for him to keep up at times. And when he's so far behind the play and he's not a shooter, I mean, at least Versteeg's a bit of a shooter. I don't love his shot. Richards is not really, you know, he's a guy who can play the point, but he's not a guy who you're going to look to score goals. He's going to be a playmaker. The problem is if your playmaker makes a pass outside, you know, from outside the zone, how does he then get involved in the offense? And the Blackhawks style is very much to fire a long pass from their defense to their offense, streaking with speed. Well, then where is he? He's kind of in no man's land because he's not going to be the guy streaking with speed because he's not fast enough and he's too far behind the play to be that effective. So while he's better than, I guess, the guys they had there before because they really were weak in terms of centers, those two guys don't really fit into the overall picture. And while they're better than, obviously, the replacement value, they could be maybe better in other systems.
Two.
Ezra Ginsberg, it's still early, but Vancouver Canucks center Nick Bonino has exceeded expectations as a replacement for Ryan Kesler and has formed excellent chemistry with teammate Chris Higgins, and on a personal note, is one of the driving forces behind my fantasy hockey team so far.
Yeah, I mentioned Nick Bonino last year when he was with the Anaheim Ducks. Has anyone noticed the Vancouver Canucks are first in the West, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so Nick Bonino, you look at what he's done there, and you know, I wasn't sure how he'd fit in on that second line because you know you have big shoes to fill, or I guess in this case skates to fill with Ryan Kesler. But you know, Nick Bonino playing with Chris Higgins, Alexander Burrows, he's got three game winners this year. He scored the shootout winner against the Anaheim Ducks a few nights back. You know, he's a guy that Richie doesn't maybe have as much of an impact on the game. Like Ryan Kesler, when the Canucks went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the Boston Bruins, he was laying body checks. He was fighting. He was really putting the team on his back. And, you know, but Nick Bonino, you know, the guy is highly skilled. He had a career year with the Anaheim Ducks last year. He's taken a little while to develop. He wasn't a highly rated draft pick. He took a long time, kind of fought his way on the third and fourth line, then got his way onto the second line. I just think, you know, the guy deserves a lot of credit. He's getting key goals. He's really gotten the most out of a guy like Alexander Burrows, who just had an awful year last year. You know, he started on the line with the Sedins, and then he even ended up being a scratch and all that. So, you know, you look at that trade, and you throw in the first-round pick, Jared McCann. You throw in Lucas Abiza, and it's yet to be determined how McCann will turn out. But Nick Bonino's done a great job. He's gotten big goals for the Vancouver Canucks, and that trade right now, I think, I would say that the Vancouver Canucks are winning that trade right now. Kessler's been all right with the Ducks, too, but I think that trade's looking pretty good for Vancouver, you know, and I think the proof is in the pudding, Drew, first in the West right now.
One.
Richard Pollock, final one for this Wednesday. Jared Cowan is gaining confidence in Ottawa and is an old-school defenseman that has a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, young guys always have trouble adjusting to the league, and you know, and Cowan comes in, he plays 82 games with the Sens in 2011-12, and you think, okay, you know, really bright future right away. And defenseman, it takes a while, and you need to be patient. But Jared Cowan is one of the, you know, a young defenseman who needed to kind of find his way, and he seems to have playing with more confidence, excuse me, this year. And I know Paul McLean's taken different tack with his players, maybe not being as hard on them. But if Cowan can round out his game and play a confident style at 6'5", 230 pounds, and he's a mean 6'5", 230 pounds, that's a throwback to the old school. To be able to carry that much, cover that much ground and be that mean, he has the potential to be an impact top four defenseman. It still takes some time, but you can see his game evolving.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a trade, finally a trade, in the NHL this week. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's funny. As he was saying, he just wanted more steak. So more cow, not more cowbell.
Oh boy, not again.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Somebody complimented me about my donut joke from Saturday's show.
Who was that?
A good friend of ours, Steven Dubienski, on Saturday night complimented me about the donut joke.
That's funny because he said to me that he thought it was a terrible joke.
What?
And he also said to me that he thought it was one of the worst jokes he's ever heard.
That's outrageous.
What about the hat you were wearing at Booby Ball? I loved it.
Did you love the hat?
You were looking stylish. Yeah, like, Richie and I were looking stylish, too, just wearing suits and, you know, this Booby Ball event that took place at the Met last Saturday. Great job.
Fundraiser for breast cancer, so.
Yep. It was a great event.
Clarify that part of it.
It was a fundraiser. Yeah. Even though that's not what I thought it was, but it turned out to be it turned out to be for a great cause. But it was Big Top theme, and you know, Drew had a nice stylish hat going on there, and you were getting a lot of compliments for it, and yeah, you were looking good, Drew. I gotta say,
Drew, where did the grilled cheese go that night?
The grilled cheese.
Well, the best part is I'm talking. Richie and I come in, and then so I see Drew and Laura, Drew's wife Laura, and I'm talking to Drew and. We're kind of having a pretty good conversation. Then Drew just goes, hold on a second, steps away. And it's like the, and grabs a grilled cheese. And it's like the guy that was holding the grilled cheeses had like expected Drew and like just got a tray of grilled cheese sandwiches just for Drew because he knew Drew wanted more. It's very funny.
Make you feel good about yourself?
No, I mean, I was having grilled cheese sandwiches as well. Actually, at one point, one of the servers left. They had those, like, remember those donuts that they had? Those, like, sugared ball donuts?
We're aware of what a donut is, yeah.
No, but it was, like, it wasn't, like, a regular donut. It was, like, a donut ball. I guess because of the Booby Ball, they had donut balls. And by accident, they left it by, like, a counter, I guess, unattended. And let me tell you, I went to town on those donuts.
there was a trade in the NHL finally this week. Finally, after, you know. We've been talking about the...
You don't have to moan anymore.
Oh, well.
Oh, well done. Oh, boy. See, that was funny.
That was funny.
That was well played.
I actually didn't even think of that one. That just happened.
We have different definitions of what funny is, obviously. Travis Moen traded from the Montreal Canadiens to the Dallas Stars in exchange for Sergei Gonchar. Moen under contract this year and next, an average annual value of $1.85 million. Gonchar is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season, earning $5 million. The Dallas Stars retain 8% of Gonchar's salary. Let's start from the Montreal perspective. Why did the Montreal Canadiens acquire a 41-year-old defenseman in this trade? What's the incentive for them?
Power play is pretty bad right now.
It's a good question because you think, okay, the power play is maybe not going. But you have Markov and Subban.
Yeah, they'll get going.
And you give Subban, obviously, the long-term deal. Of course you're going to give him that. But it's the three-year deal you give Markov, and you're wondering, well, left-side defenseman and Gonchar moves the puck well. Really not a good skater. I mean, Markov's not a great skater anymore. Really not that he was the best skater ever, but he's lost a step. Gonchar's lost about two steps, in all honesty. So you wonder from that perspective, you know, what are they thinking in terms of your top four is really Subban, Markov, Emelin, and Gilbert. So then you question, oh, is Boyu a guy they can trust? Or maybe they're a little worried about that. Do they want to play, you know, they want to switch left side or right side? I understand the idea of adding a puck-moving defenseman to a team that relies on puck-moving, as he said. And you say, oh, every team relies on puck-moving. But the Habs are a speed team. They go to the net really hard for a small team.
Yeah.
But
they're not going to grind you along the
boards.
They're
not going to grind you along the boards. And you have to get the puck moving. You have to get guys who can get it out of their own zone when they have the puck. That's the one thing about Gonchar. When he doesn't have the puck, he doesn't defend well enough. Mm-hmm. He's not a good enough skater. He's not really strong enough. And he's not tough enough against the boards to get the puck off of you. So that's going to be a problem area. Now, I know Michel Therrien has coached Gonchar before. And he pointed to that, you know, after the acquisition. I assume it played a role.
Did he coach him in Pittsburgh?
In Pittsburgh.
In his previous job.
Yes, he coached him in Pittsburgh, and I guess he likes the way that he deals with young players. Maybe he thinks Emelin will be helped by Gonchar's presence, which, again, you'd think Markov would help him with.
Yeah, you've got three Russian defensemen there now.
There's not many in the National Hockey League anymore, is he? So you think about, and Michael tells us there's nine Russian defensemen in the National Hockey League now, so a third of them play on the Montreal Canadiens. It's a little bit peculiar move. Now, you look at it from Moen. Well, Travis Moen, in all honesty, is not an effective... He's not really a top... He's for sure not a top nine guy. He can play your fourth line left wing spot. He certainly was miscast throughout his career in Montreal. I always thought playing higher than he ought to have been.
But you've got guys like Brandon Prust and Dale Weiss that play on the fourth line. So
no, he had his San Jose and his Anaheim 10 years. Obviously, the Anaheim, you know, the year when he played with Paulson and Niedermeyer, that was when he was most effective. But really, he's a fourth line, if not a fifth line guy at this point. Now, he's good in the room. You hear about Travis Moen. Never complained about, you know, not playing. Was always a great stand-up guy in the room. And I think it was Mike Hajka speculated earlier last week that Dallas might be interested in this guy because they need a little toughness and a little bit of energy in the room and an attitude change. So there's that reason for it. But from Montreal's perspective, you get out from under Moen's contract next year at $1.85. You take on a $4.6 million hit this year because they eat a little bit of the contract. But it is a little bit of an odd move. I will say, I was surprised. And for Dallas' perspective, well, you lose money, you save money this year. $1.85 isn't going to kill you next year, and you're able to get a little bit of sandpaper in your locker room.
I think there's a few. I think when this trade was made, Richie, a lot of people were looking at it from the Montreal perspective. I look at it from the Dallas Stars perspective. They're in second last in the Western Conference right now, and it's early. I mean, you're talking, they're only 4 points out of a playoff spot.
Right.
So do I think they're not going to make the playoffs this year? I think when you've got Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Jason Spezza, I think you've always got a chance to come back. And remember last year what happened with the New York Rangers. New York Rangers were out of it after 6 or 10 games, and they came back and went to the Stanley Cup Finals. So by no means do I think the Dallas Stars or the Colorado Avalanche, for that matter, are completely done after 15 games. But I'm looking at it like Jim Neal is probably looking at his lineup, and he knows that he has to acquire a defenseman if this team has a serious shot. And I think I mentioned that a couple weeks ago on midweek. So I'm looking at this as you're getting rid of Sergei Gonchar because you're probably going to want to acquire a defenseman later on in the season. And I think Jim Neal, even though I don't have any insider knowledge of this, I have to believe that he's looking for a veteran defenseman to bring in to replace Sergei Gonchar. So as far as Travis Moen goes, yeah, you want to put him on, you know, the fourth line, you know, and what does that mean for a guy like Colton Xavier or something like that, who's young and has talent? Because you know, Richie, that guys like Ryan Garbutt and Cody Eakin, they're kind of solidified on the third line there, whether it's Sean Horkoff or Vernon Fiddler. So Moen, I think that he's also a candidate, by the way, to, you know, on that team to kind of be a healthy scratch sometimes. He's kind of that veteran guy.
For sure.
Come playoff time, he can be very valuable with all that playoff experience. Remember back in, was it 2007, he was really good with the Anaheim Ducks. So to me, this is a trade that you're kind of, it's a little bit of a shakeup, because look at how the Dallas Stars are doing. I mean, they're struggling. Mm-hmm. They're struggling defensively big time, not so much offensively, even though they are struggling offensively. To me, it's more so that defense, and there's a lot of question marks with if this D group can really get the job done. And I wouldn't be surprised, as I said, if Jim Neal makes another move. But I think, you know, Richie mentions the salary. You know, that really isn't a factor here. I don't think we'd agree. I mean, it's a little bit of a factor, but really, well, you're kind of, Montreal moves a guy that really wasn't playing. He only played 10 games out of 15, and then Dallas, really, Sergei Gonchar, has only played 3 games, had an injury, but he doesn't really factor into the long-term plans.
Well, you look at their defenses, and, you know, Goligoski, left-side defenseman, offensive guy. Jordy Benn, more of a stay-at-home guy, but left-handed defenseman. Trevor Daley, left-handed defenseman. Jamie Oleksiak, young player, left-handed defenseman. Brendan Dillon, left-handed defenseman. And I know they're trying to work in this John Klingberg, who I don't know a lot about, but is playing with Goligoski right now, and they obviously have some high hopes for him. This is a sign to me that the Stars are thinking long-term and short-term. Okay, they're thinking long-term because they want to get their young guys involved in the game right now. And by that, I mean Dillon, Oleksiak, Ben, Klingberg. These are young guys.
Sure.
Okay? And short-term because, frankly, there's not much of a drop-off from Gonchar to the next guy here, because Gonchar is way past his prime.
He's almost exclusively a power play guy at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to play 20 minutes a game again.
No, yeah, exactly. Right? So I think from, you know, Montreal's perspective, it makes more sense to me from Dallas' perspective than Montreal. But if he's going to go anywhere, I think Montreal makes sense in terms of, you know, bringing along some young players, knowing Markov and those guys from having a history together, knowing Therrien, and being able to move the puck to a team. And also, you talk about another thing. Montreal, really good skating team. If Gonchar is not a good skater, you know, I talked about Chicago maybe being an issue on offense. Well, and defensively, if you have a lot better speed and back pressure, then you can compensate a little bit for the slower defenseman than maybe some other teams can. So there's those factors as well.
I think for the Dallas perspective, there's something to be said for the leadership that Travis Moen probably brings. You look at that roster, and there's nobody there that screams to you as a great leader. Jason Spezza was the captain in Ottawa.
Not a leader,
but he was not a leader. Tyler Seguin is not ready to make that step. I'm not sure if Jamie Benn's there yet. And then everybody else, there's nobody there. I mean, Sean Horkoff, sure, but he's 37 years old.
Jamie Benn is the captain of this team, and absolutely Sean Horkoff is a leader on this team. Sure, you know, he might only have 1 or 2 years left, but I think your point, Drew, is that he comes in and he's just another leader on a young team, because you don't have a lot of leaders on this team after Ben Horkoff.
I want to play something for you. This is apparently the Stars in an effort to try and get out of their losing streak. They were in a 7-game losing streak prior to winning last night. Lindy Ruff had an interesting sort of leadership style drill in practice on Monday. Here's, after that leadership style drill, here's Lindy Ruff talking about what happened there.
Finished practice with an entertaining drill, at least for us to watch. Were you surprised at all that the Grinders won that race?
Well, it's really just a drill for teamwork. And somebody in those teams had to take some leadership, and they didn't. I found it interesting, because the only way you succeed at that is if somebody becomes a leader of that group and dictates. You know, we're going to give them another crack down the road here, but the one group totally failed the test. I heard them talking and trying to get straightened out. It's a fun drill, but it's an interesting drill where, you know, they almost didn't get finished, which is, here's a drill that you're going to have to work together as a team. Somebody's going to have to grab the bull by the horns, and they weren't able to get it done. I liked watching it, I liked watching the guys in the middle that were talking to each other, and one guy was giving the orders, and everybody else was following, and the teamwork got it done.
Interesting to note, the team that failed, the team that couldn't get it done, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Jason Spezza, all part of the team that failed in this instance. So it might say something about the leadership issues and the teamwork issues there in Dallas.
One thing you like about Lindy Ruff, that guy ain't pulling no punches.
Yeah. He doesn't pull punches, Richie, and that doesn't sound like a very fun locker room to be in right now. They're not winning a lot of hockey games. As we mentioned, they're at the bottom of the Western Conference with the Colorado Avalanche. Who really envisioned that with the Vancouver Canucks at the top of the Western Conference? But they've got to dig deep and find a way to play better here, because they're not playing very well right now. And you mentioned, Drew, you know, at the beginning of the season, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Jason Spezza all on the same line, and now they've been broken up because Nichushkin comes back, and they're facing some adversity. I think both these teams, it's kind of interesting, Richie, how both the Avalanche and the Stars, you know, really came back from having terrible years a couple years ago, and especially the Avalanche, and now they're starting to face some adversity, and, you know, they got to win some hockey games.
We talk about it all the time, but it's so true. Expectations. Make the playoffs last year, Dallas and Colorado. What do you come into the season with? Expectations of better output than last year, whether that be second round or more points or whatever, you know, whatever. You look at Vancouver. What does Vancouver come into the season with? Really no expectations. You know, a good season, maybe finishing 9th or 10th overall on the Western Conference. That would have been a good effort. Nobody would have really said, oh, they let their fans down. They didn't perform. Mm-hmm. Think about it. And you look around the league. Expectations, they totally change the locker room. How you deal with the expectations. And young teams, which Colorado and Dallas are having a tough time with it.
Sure.
And it's not that surprising. But it is something to note. And when the coach, in both those cases, Lindy Ruff and Patrick Roy, have called out guys, they're in those rooms. We're not. So they're obviously seeing some signs that they don't like.
Let's head to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes. We'll look around the league at some goings-on. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment this Wednesday evening here on NHL Midweek. Reminder, Saturday, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Predators. That's taking place in Nashville.
We've played the Predators this will be the third time that they've played them already. It's ridiculous.
It's a lot of Nashville Predators, but the good way to look at it is we're almost done with the Nashville Predators.
No, I have no problem with the Nashville Predators. It's a great team, great city. I've never been there. It's always been number one on the cities I'd like to visit, actually.
I highly recommend it. I was there last year.
Yeah. Well, I remember talking to you about it. I mean, the history of country music and all that. It's not so much that. It's just, it feels like the schedule is a little bit weird this year. There's not a lot of Saturday afternoon games. We haven't seen a lot of the Western, like Anaheim, we haven't played them yet. And Chicago, I don't think we see till February. Just a little
here in Winnipeg, you're saying.
Yeah, they've already played Chicago, yeah. But we don't see Chicago and Winnipeg till later on in the season. Just the schedule is a little bit weird, you know, the intricacies of the schedule.
It's St. Louis that they play a bunch at the end of the season.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get into some of the NHL news and notes. We'll start with Wayne Gretzky admitting that he talked with the Leafs about the president's position.
Yeah, we knew that already.
I know we knew about it, but if he wasn't going to take the Leafs' job at this point in time, do you see what job is Wayne Gretzky that interested in that he's going to come in and take, short of commissioner of the entire league?
Well, he's not taking that job, Drew. I mean, I think something with L.A. would be a lot more appealing to Wayne Gretzky. You wonder about Edmonton. You never know about Edmonton, just because that's a wild card in his past and all of his buddies there. I think they're, you know, what about Las Vegas? We'll talk about that in a second, probably. What about Las Vegas? There are other teams I could see him going to. If the job is right, I still see him coming back into the league for sure. I don't see it being in a position other than kind of an executive above the GM, but with input into the GM's big decisions.
Right. So you're talking president, president of hockey operations, similar to what Shanny's doing in Toronto. Right. I agree with you, Richie.
If you wanted an ownership stake in a team too to take one of those jobs.
Yeah, the last one went pretty well. no, but I mean the. In all seriousness, Gretz is for sure going to be involved with hockey in some respect, and I never thought Toronto would be a good fit. I didn't think he'd want to be part of that. We don't know exactly how close it was, but obviously they approached him. But I agree with Richie. I could see it being a California team, specifically L.A., or possibly another southern team. It's not going to be Arizona. So, but you'd have to think that if the timing is right for him, and he's about to be a grandfather, right? So he's got a lot of other stuff going on. But you'd have to think that, you know, he would, in that interview that he did this past weekend, he even admitted that he misses, you know, going to the rink every day, stuff like that. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if we see him involved with the Kings or another organization.
According to both the Hockey News and now the New York Post and the Las Vegas Journal Review, the ownership group for a new Las Vegas franchise that still does not exist has been selected by the NHL. That will be the Maloof family. They previously owned the Sacramento Kings of the NBA. They also own a number of casinos in Las Vegas, as well as billionaire William P. Foley has been selected as the ownership group for the team in Las Vegas, even though the NHL denies there's going to be a team in Las Vegas. Is it now reaching the point of foregone conclusion?
Yes. There's no question they'll be there within a couple of years.
Yeah.
There's no question. When there's smoke, there's fire.
2 to 4 years.
Bob McKenzie talking about it at length, and he's mentioned it before. They're going to go to Vegas. I mean, again, why are they expanding as opposed to moving some of these teams that don't seem to make any money ever? Well, because the owners get more money. That's why.
Richie, it's for sure going to... What's this team going to be called? Are they going to be called the Blackjacks?
The Posse.
The Millionaires, the Billionaires? Like, that's what I want to know, because I think there already is a Las Vegas Gamblers, isn't there?
I believe the Las Vegas Gamblers played in the
XFL,
USFL, or the XFL, or
that's a good question. What would the name be?
It's going to be like, to me, like
something hockey related.
Blackjacks.
I don't know. About
it's not going to be gambling related. I'm joking.
I know
it won't be gambling related.
The Las Vegas Desert Dogs.
It's a terrible name.
Ooh, that was bad.
Well, it's going to be something ridiculous. Yeah. Las Vegas Cactus. The Las Vegas Desert?
No, these it's are. That's true. What I'm saying. Like, I don't know.
I'm using those as to prove how ridiculous.
I'm taking
it
to Twitter. I just tweeted it out, so we'll see what the Twitterverse comes up with.
But I mean, you know, again, I ask you. I mean, we've talked about this on the air before. We're not quite sure why the NHL thinks that franchise in Las Vegas will be successful.
I can think of one reason, and it rhymes with honey.
Money.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, there's tons of money to be made here, and I think that there's a concern with the population.
Let's go to these games.
I think you're going to see. Well, I don't think it's going to be hard to find companies to buy boxes and all of that. I think the arena's being built now by MGM, right?
Yeah.
And I think there might be some concern about the season ticket base, but I don't know. I don't think they're worried about that. I think there's so much money there, and it'll be supported. So
one of the questions is how many boxes the casinos will own and seats the casino will own, and how many packages. I mean, you talk to people that are in the know, they will tell you there are ways for it to make money, but to me it seems like it would be quite challenging in some respects.
You know what's kind of interesting to me, Richie, too? They mentioned that you're not going to be able to gamble in Las Vegas, right? Which is pretty obvious, but I think people might think that that's going to be part of it, but it's not.
Yeah.
They're really worried about losing the NHL book.
That's it for this Wednesday and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play voice, for joining us. In case you missed any of the interview or any of the show, it will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For producer Michael Remus and Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We'll see you Saturday at 12 noon for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for listening to NHL Midweek.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.